Hi, this is Bill with Kosiaba Fitness, and today my guest is a very good friend of mine who is an absolutely amazing gentleman. He is a world champion powerlifter. He has a master's degree in clinical social work and outstanding athlete and an outstanding person, my friend Michael Elliott.
Thanks, Bill. How are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic, Michael. I'd like to start this where people always go with blind people. When they meet us, whether they're blind or they're sighted, they always start with the first thing. How'd you lose your vision? What's wrong with your vision? So let's get the background on Michael and his vision and get that out of the way.
No problem. I have glaucoma, which was detected when I was 8. And at age 8, I had surgery on my left eye and my right eye. That's both eyes, yes. So relieve the pressure. My left eye was my worst, and I was told not to play contact sports, and I continued to play football and basketball, which led to 3 additional surgeries on my right eye. And when I had surgery on my right eye at age 13, the doctor tried a new procedure, and he froze a nerve in that eye, in my right eye, and I lost the vision that day. Over the years, my left eye has deteriorated to just light perception. And after losing my vision, I wound up going to the same high school with Bill, which is Nova. And Bill helped me out a lot. Bill, I got to toss this in because I tell a lot of people this. Because I was very depressed because I couldn't play contact sports. I did not have the friends I used to have because I was unable to participate in any sports or any other activities we participated in. And Bill, talking to him one day, we were talking about weightlifting. He got me into weightlifting at age 14. And emotionally, that really helped me out a lot. Being able to do things, something on my own physically and not depend on anyone else. So I salute him and thank him for that in public today again.
Now, that's really nice of you to say. You've done a lot for me over the years that's more than made up for that. Let's talk about, yeah, obviously you were very into athletics before that, and you said you played football. What else were you doing sports-wise before you lost your vision?
Basketball. That was my number one sport. My goal in life was to be a professional basketball player. What now?
You ain't big enough.
I was 6'1". Okay, and I played point guard. Tell Bugsy that. It's Spud Webb.
Okay.
They're not big enough.
All right, so basketball and football, and that obviously came to an end. And
correct.
We got you started with the weights.
Right.
And I know you were involved in some other sports as well. When you went off to college, you were on the wrestling team?
Yeah, I was on the wrestling team in junior college. And as an adult, I coached a couple of goalball teams and participated with those teams in Tallahassee.
Okay, there's a great intro right there. A lot of people don't know what goalball is. Could you explain it, the rules, and basically what kind of a game it is?
Okay. Goalball was invented and right after World War II, if I'm correct, and part of this was to give the blind soldiers an activity to participate in when they returned home. It's 3 guys on a court about the size of a volleyball court, and you use tactile marking with string across the court about 30 feet with tape to tape it down, and 10 feet deep, and you have a center point, and you are from one side of the court to the other side, there's about 20 feet in the middle. There's 3 guys on each side of the court, a wing, left wing, right wing, and a center. And their job is to cover that side of their court. Like the wing covers technically from 7 feet from the end line to inside on each side, and the center covers all that additional space. However, there are some centers and wing people that are so damn good when it comes to chasing that ball down. They're all over the court. And the object of the game is to roll the ball from one end of the court to the other end and to prevent the other team from blocking the ball and preventing them from getting in their goals. Most people are sitting here going, oh, that's simple enough. Not when you have players who can get that ball up to 30 and 40 miles an hour. And the ball is about the size of a basketball, and it's but a little heavier with bells inside of it. So you can hear the bells when the ball is rolling, but when they're rolling that ball as hard, 30 to 40 miles an hour, it's just that's all you hear. And the ball whizzes right by you. But the players are good.
Okay, do you kick the ball or roll it or?
You block it with your body and you roll it. The ball has to be on the ground before it hits the center line. If it's above the center line, goes above the center line, when you're rolling it to the other side of the court, before it hits the ground, it's a penalty shot. Therefore, you as an individual who rolled the ball and created the penalty has to defend your goal against three individuals for one penalty shot.
Ouch.
Yes.
I would guess you came home kind of black and blue after games of this?
A lot, yes. I worked for Blind Services at the bureau chief at the time, and it wasn't unusual for me to walk in a meeting with black eyes or limping or with some other injury from being hit with the ball, not blocking the ball properly.
Did you just tell me your wife beat you up again or what?
I tried that initially. But the thing about sports that I really like is that what it does for you emotionally and mentally and as well as physically, how participating in sports, any type of sport, how you are, I'm going to use the word accepted in society because of your social skills. I've worked with players and coached players who have actually been on the national team and have traveled all around the world. And the first thing they tell me, you know, without gold ball, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to see the world or do a lot of the things that I've done because it worked on their social skills to make them better people. And a lot of the individuals that participate on the national team, they do wind up going to college and doing professional jobs based on my observation and the things I've seen. I place heavy emphasis on sports on a daily basis, especially talking to blind kids. I like to do a survey, and I think everyone should do this who's visually impaired. When you meet someone blind or someone sighted, ask them how many individuals that are blind that they know that are overweight, and give them 5 seconds. And they'll probably roll off about 5 to 10 names. Now ask them to identify individuals that are blind that are not overweight, and they have to sit there and think about it. Because being blind individuals, we don't think about our physical appearance as much as quote unquote people with 20/20 vision. And that's why I think sports are so important, keeping you in shape and hopefully keeping the weight down some as well.
Okay, Michael. So the thing is, you know, blind people, as of the mere nature of things, are even more sedentary and less active than sighted people. So to go along with your question of how many overweight versus how many healthy blind people do you know, the question is how many athletes do you know that are blind versus how many computer geeks that sit and play on their computer, play on their phone, and, you know, never move from their computer, do you know?
I know more computer geeks, unfortunately. But if you take a look at the computer geeks, we've actually got a few out to participate in other sports. It's their way of being part of society. And I'm not knocking the computer because it's opened a lot of doors for individuals that are blind to actually see the world from their computers. But I try to place that emphasis. It's more than just a computer. Like today, kids are always playing video games. As kids, Bill, and you can recall this, we were outside.
That's true.
Try to get a kid out the door now. It's the hardest thing in the world.
Whether they're sighted or blind.
Correct. And being blind, parents, it's harder for the blind kid to get outside now with their parents than a sighted kid because of all the other things that are happening in society. But I do know more blind geeks, and I was told that I'm one on a daily basis by my girlfriend, but I deny it daily.
But you're the ideal mix. You're the ideal mix. You've got the brain, and you still and got some vanity. You care about how you look. You care about being healthy and feeling good. And that is a problem. A lot of blind people, like you said, don't realize that it's a visual world and our appearance matters. And if we want to be taken seriously by sighted people, we got to look like we care about ourselves.
Correct. And that's the main thing. I remember back in the late 80s, 90s, I used to talk about the residential schools, that there wasn't enough role models there for kids. And I place heavy emphasis on it's all right to go to the residential schools, but allow the kids to go home on the weekends. Because those are the kids they're going to have to deal with in society on a daily basis. And those kids during that time while you're growing up, if you have any issues that society is not accepting, such as the eye poking, not doing eye contact when you're talking to those kids will point those things out to you. And I think from the teasing, and I realized from the teasing, kids have stopped with some of the eye poking and they didn't have better eye contact because of that. And I love the residential schools because education-wise, you can't beat it. And the kids I've met from those residential schools are awesome when it comes to the education part. But with some of them, it's the socialization that's part of the issue. And when the sports, when they play sports in those residential schools, you can see the difference in the school because the difference in the kids. Because they're now competing against other kids that are vision impaired and competing against other kids with vision impairment. But they're traveling outside of that environment to other areas and learning different things as well.
Okay, now let's talk about sports because you're saying they're participating against other visually impaired people, and that's fine, and that's what Gold Ball is about. But what about the sports where we can compete on an equal ground with somebody who is not visually impaired? Correct me if I'm wrong. And I don't know if you know more about this than I do, but martial arts, there have been some great blind martial artists, and you don't to graduate to a higher level belt, you're participating in a tournament. And you're not
Correct.
Participating against blind people, you're participating against another green belt or another brown belt.
Correct. And blind people have excelled in judo when it comes to the martial art because it's mostly grabbing and tossing.
Exactly. Once I got my hands on you, you ain't getting away from me.
Correct, and I think, and I can be corrected, when you initially start out, they change the rules initially, so both individuals are actually touching when the person is vision impaired, but that's the only change to the procedures that I understand.
Okay, well, you wrestled in college, so that's another sport that there have been a lot of great blind athletes that have participated on equal ground with sighted athletes. What did they do? I know in wrestling you got three periods. First period, usually you're loose, and the second period, third period, one's on top, one's on the bottom. What kind of an adjustment did they make for you on that first period, if anything?
We started out in that position where one's on the top, one's on the bottom. Or we started out touching while we were standing.
Okay. And that was the only
adaptation that I requested.
Okay. And that was fine, and you were competing in open tournament or open competition.
Correct, because I did this in junior college for a little while.
Okay. Let's get to the powerlifting, because that's where you really excel. World
Correct.
Championships, world records, and, you know, I'll take the credit. Okay, I got you started with the weights, but you, hey, you went a long way, and when you called me about powerlifting, I'm going to be honest, I didn't have a lot to help you with that. It's not my field, but... How did you get into the powerlifting, and let's talk about the travel.
I was coaching a gold ball team in Tallahassee, and one of the guys who I coached, I talked him into coming to the weight room, and he was unbelievably strong. And I realized we were heading to a national tournament in Colorado Springs, and they had powerlifting competition the day after. So since I was in charge, I decided that we would leave a day later, and we both would participate in the powerlifting competition. And we both came out as being eight athletes, and based on that, we were asked to participate on the United States Association of Blind Athlete powerlifting team. And things started from there, and I met a lot of great guys on that team. And they taught me to participate in tournaments where I participated against people with 20/20 vision. I can recall our first tournament that my friend named is Bobby that we both participated in Pensacola, Florida. When the judge walked up to both of us and said, "You guys are strong as hell." He said, "Unfortunately, you're not going to win today." And we both looked at him and said, "What are you talking about? You're just telling me that we're strong." He goes, "Oh, but they didn't tell you. These people here are taking steroids. You're not. So you're not going to win. But you're strong as hell. Keep up the good work, guys." And we felt good about that.
And you had good reason. Now let's go back to that first meet. So you had gone to Colorado Springs, you were participating in the gold ball tournament.
Yeah.
And you pretty much just went, hey, there's powerlifting tomorrow. Let's do it.
Right. And that's what I...
So you went in there not having a clue what you were doing. You just knew, I'm going to squat, I'm going to bench press, I'm going to deadlift. You didn't have a suit, you didn't have a belt, you didn't have any equipment.
That's about it. No knee wraps, no nothing. And Coach Peck, when we walked in, he said, where are your knee wraps? I go, what knee wraps? I go, we don't use knee wraps. And I showed him my belt. He go, oh, you're going to need a better belt than that. And we were mostly raw. And that's what they liked about us. We did not know that much about it, but we were just naturally strong from working out all the time. And with the direction of Coach Peck and Coach Robert Massey, and especially the guys that was on the team, and Edith and Steve out in California, Cody in Texas, they called me a lot, encouraging me, talking to me about dieting, technique, and things of that nature on a daily basis. So the support was there.
That's key.
Yeah, and based on that, we went to a couple qualifiers, and we qualified to travel to Prague, where our first international tournament took place. It was called the World Blind Games, and that was my first time traveling out of the country, and that was just awesome. Especially, I know it's corny. You're getting ready to march in, and you hear the national anthem, and you know you're there competing for the United States.
There's nothing corny about that. That's good to hear. More people need to have that attitude. That's an attitude that's lost now.
Yeah, I mean, that was awesome. Me and Bobby just looked at each other, like, this is going to be awesome. And the guys was there, Cody and all those guys, they were really into it. We had one lady lifter, Edie. We had another guy from Fort Myers who I call a little giant, because this little dude was unbelievably strong. He weighed 113 pounds. And I think we did quite well, especially in our first tournament.
How did you personally do in that one?
I came in second, 2 points. They asked me, I was trying to deadlift, but I can't remember the number, more than I've actually ever done. And if I would have got that deadlift, I would have beat this guy from Iran. And I missed the lift. Actually, I got the lift up, but they told me I hitched it.
You kind of risked it.
Yeah, I can't remember doing that. I just remember the weight being heavy, and I was trying to get it up.
I'm guessing that was somewhere over 500 pounds.
It was.
Okay.
And the thing about it, I just had a lot of fun there, because on my first lift, I lost my balance. No, on my first lift, I did a touch and go. And what I mean by that, I didn't bring the weight down and pause for a beat and then push it back up. I was so excited. So I did a touch and go on the second attempt on the bench. I lost my balance, and I told the coach, the bench isn't level. It's moving. I was the first person to point that out, but everyone was missing their lift because of that. And I asked, can I get my lift back? They told me no. So I did get the third one. And at the time, my wife was with me, Felicia, and she came back. She goes, what's going on? I told her. She said, all these guys are upset with you because you're not getting your lift. I said, I'm here to have fun. I go, that's part of the competition, having fun. Win or lose, I'm having fun.
That's something that's been lost again in athletics. Like, the patriotism's been lost. The idea of sports is supposed to be, you know, camaraderie and having fun and meeting people. And,
right.
And some people take it so deadly seriously.
No, we were in Prague having fun, you know, because we look that this way, we may never come back here again, so let's enjoy this, and so we'll have memories of this in the future.
Once-in-a-lifetime experience.
You got it. It was awesome, and the people we met there, couldn't understand a lot of English, but they were the nicest people and showing us around, and a couple of guys became attached to me, and I don't know why, little kids, and everywhere I went, those kids were there.
They were just impressed with this huge American that was so strong.
I guess. But the kids was neat. But what I was caught off guard about, they drink beer all the time. We go in the weigh-in at 7:30 a.m. They got kegs of beer for us to drink. And the Americans are looking around at each other like, what? Beer this time of morning? That was a neat experience, and they eat a lot of pork. Those are the three things we carry from there: beer in the morning, a lot of pork, and everybody smokes.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I've been in Europe, and everybody in Europe smokes.
Yes.
So that was the one trip to Prague. Now, I know you've had three times you've competed internationally, and you've got a bunch of world records. You want to go over that stuff a little?
I actually went to Prague twice for another competition, and I placed second again, but behind the same guy from Iran. The second time we was in Prague. In Canada, we went to Canada. That was another awesome trip because this was the World Blind Games. Therefore, we stayed at a dorm in Quebec. But what was so awesome about that, we had athletes from track and field, goal ball, all the different sports was there. And so all of us was there from America, and we got to interact with each other, didn't interact with all other countries. Basically what I'm saying, just look at all the disciplines. Those guys and ladies and girls competing in their events and giving it their all. And the awesome thing about it, when we had time, we went to each other's events. Because I coached goal ball, I looked up the entire USA goal ball team at the weightlifting venture with us, watching us powerlift on their time. We thought that was awesome.
It is. So that was just like the Olympics, where you have all the different sports and the whole American team worked as a unit and supported each other.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
And that was awesome. And you saw the camaraderie there. And Mark was is still over the director of the USABA, Mark Lucas. He was an awesome person to be around, positive about the team USA, joking around. He just kept us upbeat and on our toes all the time and reminding us where we was from, and we was here representing ourselves, well, it's the USBA, but most important, the United States of America.
That makes me very proud to hear that.
Yes.
So, now you've got some records.
Yeah, I have records in for my age category in Canada for, if I'm correct, squatting and deadlifting. And the reason those records are important to me because I popped my meniscus in July and popped it again in April in a tournament in Tampa, Florida. And the doctor told me I shouldn't participate, but I decided to participate after all. And that's when I got those records.
Okay, so you've got some world records as a master's lifter. You competed in what weight class?
I think I was 242 in Canada, and the both tournaments in Prague, I was 220.
Do you happen to know what any of your best lifts are, whether they're the record lifts or they were just in the gym?
In the gym, I've squatted close to 600 pounds. I bench close to 4, and I deadlift 550 in the gym. But people used to point out to people, and they pointed out to me initially, you will not get those lifting competition. And I used to say to Steve, why not? He goes, you'll see, Michael. And he's right, because it's a totally different environment. You have people looking at you. You're nervous. So you're a bit off your game. So it's totally different when you're competing than when you're in the gym, because you're relaxing, you're joking around, and just clowning around with your friends. Although you're doing that in competition, but, you know, this is for all the marbles.
Sure. It seems like because of the adrenaline and the excitement, you might do even better. But when there's no pressure is when we usually, you don't worry about it. You try it, it goes.
Correct. Yeah, because in these tournaments, when you walk out the rack with 400 pounds on your shoulder, you have to stand there perfectly still until the judge tells you to go. In the gym, you can step out and say, okay, I'm still. Mm-hmm. And you just do the squat and come back up. So you're nervous about that. I can recall in Canada, deadlifting, I brought the weight straight up. I'm standing there, and I got 3 red lights. I'm like, why? I didn't roll my shoulders back. Those little things, in the gym, you don't notice that because no one points those things out to you. But in competition, you have to remember to do just all those little things in order to get 3 green lights.
Okay, let's just for the sighted people. Obviously, you can't see those green lights, red lights. How do they let you know?
Then you'll put the down. So usually someone would scream and yell from USA. Let me rephrase this. They yell from all the countries when you have gotten a good lift. That was the awesome thing about the powerlifting and competing internationally. Regardless if you was competing with someone, the camaraderie was there with the other countries as well.
That's fantastic. Okay, well, we've covered the powerlifting, we've talked about the gold ball, and let's talk about the intellectual side of Michael a little bit. You got, I said a little bit. We don't have to drag this out too long. Master's in clinical social work, and you worked for the Division of Blind Services for a long time. Cover that real quick, and then tell us what you're doing now.
Okay, I worked for the Blind Service, as you mentioned, for 17 years. I was a counselor, program specialist, the rehab engineer, did the rehab engineering, and also the bureau chief of client services, as well as the business enterprise program. I just worked my way through, and because of technology, I think I do understand that's the reason why I was able to excel. By learning the computers, a lot of the support I would receive from the support staff, I didn't need anymore because I felt they worked too slow. And I was just interested in learning about procedures and policies and volunteering and getting involved on policy teams or any task that was related to my job. And that contributed to the advancement. The rehab engineering job came along after the bureau chief position. As bureau chief, I was over the rehab engineer. However, I spent more time beta testing their stuff on my own time to make sure it was accessible to people who were blind because I was really into the technology. And based on that, after leaving blind services, I've established my own company called SOAR Consultants, where we do everything just about that a rehab engineer can do. We do job assessments, we do computer setups, we do installs. One of my pet projects that I really like, which involved the USABA, which just started with blind services, we get surplus computers back from the state, i.e. Division of Blind Services, and we wipe those computers clean, and we put on demo JAWS and all and various types of programs, and we ship those back out to the older adults or the kids who can't afford computers. And then the next step is to get either Freedom Scientific or GW Micro or someone to give them an authorization for the JAWS or the Window Eyes. So we've been very successful there. And there's companies here in the state of Florida, such as Florida Reading Division, as well as Emerald Coast and Magnifying America, who have assisted me personally, especially in the sports through donations. And now they assist with helping us to get equipment, refurbished equipment to older blind individuals as well as kids who can't afford it. So that's my pet project now. I just spent 2 days working on 9 computers that are driving me up the wall
Okay,
so we can get those out.
so what it sounds like is just going back to how much the sports have affected your life and how you were saying they help with socialization, it sounds like your interaction with these different companies because of your sports is also helping you with this business.
Correct. With the business venture. And
That's
also with SOAR Technology Consultants, what I'm trying to do and what I have done, we only 85% of the people that I do hire are visually impaired or blind to do the technology part of it. If we hire someone to go out and do a computer setup, besides what we pay them an hour, we just turn around and pay their driver, so money doesn't come directly out of their pocket. And that is something we've been successful with thus far.
That's awesome.
In the state of Florida, yeah, because I'm like you said, there's a lot of computer geeks out there, and a lot of people that are vision impaired or blind are looking for employment. So what I'm trying to do, based on me working at Blind Service, I know a lot of them, is to identify people throughout the state who can actually are willing to do work by me giving them a call within 72 hours to do some of the work I'm requesting. If not, I go out and do it myself.
Well, you know, you're giving people the chance to make money, And I know that the kind of work you do is not inexpensive, so you're giving them a chance to make a reasonable money, not minimum wage. Plus,
correct.
I'm sure you're making a nice profit as well.
I'm trying to. I'll just tell you, on average, we paid individuals who work with us $25 an hour because it is a technical job. And, you know, you look at these things, oh, if you have a disability, we can pay you less because you should be happy to have a job. No, that's not the way it should be. People with disabilities are as competitive as people without disabilities. You know, go back to the women movement. They paid women less than they paid men. They was actually doing the same job. So I look at it from that point, what I would like to make because of my knowledge and my skill. Pay me for my skills. And that's what we try to do here as well.
Well, sounds like a great program. I wish you nothing but success with the business. What is the web address?
It's SOAR, SOAR, Consultants, CONSULTANTS.com, SOAR Consultants.
Okay, and by the time this interview is posted on my website, hopefully my webmaster will have that link on my page of links as well.
That would be great. And like I said, we do a lot of volunteer work. On our page, we have a for sale where we ask individuals who have older equipment who are interested in selling it. We post it on the website with their number, and who's ever interested in the equipment will give them a call, and they negotiate the price, et cetera, and then just call me back to take it off the website. That's all we ask.
Wow. Well, you know, it sounds like you're putting a lot back in. And you're giving a lot, so, you know, it's going to benefit you. It has to benefit you. It always works that way. If you're doing something because you love what you're doing and it's obvious that you love doing this and you're trying to give back to the blind community, it's certainly going to benefit you.
It does. I smile. That's what's more beneficial to me, the success of others.
Yeah, can't argue with that. Let's wrap this up, Michael. What else you want to say?
I'm good. As my friend Mark Johnson will say, and who's with Operation ACT UP in Atlanta, we boldly want to go where everyone has been before, and we're doing it with technology.
Sounds great. Bill from Kosiaba Fitness, my friend Michael Elliott, thank you very much. If you've listened to this, post a comment. If you want to get in touch with Michael, his address is there. And good night. Have a wonderful day or whatever.